This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. Education has opened doors for many immigrants to build new lives in the U.S., and occasionally it has closed that door as well. The visa process for international students can be daunting, especially when pursuing graduate degrees. The University of Farmington in Michigan marketed itself as a solution to that problem. It claimed to offer advanced online STEM courses, STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. And international students who hoped to extend their student visas applied to Farmington. They might not have known that it was a fake storefront and website. And they almost certainly did not know that Immigration and Customs Enforcement built that storefront. The goal? Deport students trying to illicitly extend their stays in the U.S. In the past year, more than 250 students were arrested on immigration violations related to Farmington. Many left the U.S. voluntarily. Others were deported. What does this case say about our immigration enforcement systems? And for those students who did not deal with Farmington, what challenges do they face? Joining us in studio is Teresa Cardinal Brown, the Director of Immigration and Cross-Border Policy at the Bipartisan Policy Center. She's also a former Department of Homeland Security official who served in both the George W. Bush and Obama administrations. Teresa, welcome to 1A.
Glad to be here.
Joining us on the line is Niraj Wariku, an immigration and religion reporter for the Detroit Free Press, who's been covering the Farmington case. Niraj, welcome.
Thanks for having me on the show, Joshua.
We'd also love to hear from you, especially if you are a foreign student, your thoughts about this sting operation and whether or not your experiences as an international student make this story resonate for you. Perhaps you're a teacher who works with foreign students, or perhaps you're just a natural-born American citizen who's never thought about this before. Regardless of who you are, we'd be thrilled if you would email us, 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. Niraj, can we just get the basics from you? What exactly was the University of Farmington? Is there anything else to the description of that that's worth mentioning?
Yes. In 2015, undercover agents with ICE, specifically with their investigative division known as HSI, set up this fake university in the Detroit suburb of Farmington Hills. They actually had an office and they had people posing as university officials. The president's name was called Ali, and he would email prospective students encouraging them to apply. They even went to the extent of putting the university on the Department of Homeland Security's website of universities that are legitimate. So when prospective students went on the website for ICE, it said this university was approved to participate in these programs. So they went to great lengths to give the public and give prospective students that it's a legitimate university.
Now, we noted that the sting operation did not start under the Trump administration. So these stings, or the preparation for this, began nearer to the end of the Obama administration, right?
Correct. And it started in 2015, according to federal prosecutors. In January of 2016, they incorporated the university in the state of Michigan, according to state records.
So what kinds of students would be applying to Farmington? Is there a particular profile, or do they fit a particular description in terms of who tried to become part of this fake university?
Well, it was primarily advertised as a STEM-associated university for tech and computer fields. Most of the students were from India, the Telugu-speaking from a state in India called Andhra Pradesh, and many of them were in previous other programs in the country, in master's programs, trying to get degrees so that they could either work in America or stay here, or some of them did want to go back to India. So that was a general profile of the students who applied.
Walk us through what happened to these students in the course of this sting operation. So they thought about getting advanced STEM degrees, science, technology, engineering, and math. They see Farmington listed on DHS's website. Then what happens?
Right. And then they also check out the accreditation agency, which approves these universities. And that, too, approved the university. In fact, that accreditation agency was working with DHS, with ICE. Unknown to the students, of course. So when they applied to it and they went in, they were thought that there was going to be classes on site. So in some cases, they have online classes with these programs. And in some of them, they have physical site on location. So some of the students did get suspicious when there weren't any physical classes, meaning a specific location. And some tried to transfer. Some did transfer out. And then the arrests happened. In January of this year, ICE arrested about 100 students. It's now increased to 250 total in terms of the total number of arrests.
And before I come to Teresa, we should note there are two groups of people who were prosecuted in this case. There were the students and then also the recruiters.
Right. The recruiters were they arrested eight recruiters and charged them criminally. And they're sort of separate from the 250 students who only faced immigration violations, but they faced some criminal charges. Out of the eight, seven have been sentenced so far, and the last one is going to be sentenced in January. In those cases, the defense attorneys say they too were entrapped, but that's a little bit different of a case because in those situations, they were working with the university officials to sort of attract more students. But of course, they didn't know that the university was fake as well, according to the defense attorneys.
So the recruiters were not working for DHS?
Right. They were not undercover agents. They were not working for DHS or ICE. They, too, did not know it was a fake operation.
Teresa Cardinal Brown, what kind of immigration violations are at issue here, either the ones that may have been committed or the ones that DHS was presumably trying to catch?
Sure. So the status of foreign students in the United States is entirely dependent on their relationship to the school or university in which they are attending. So as long as they have requirements about attending schools that are only approved by ICE, they have to maintain a specific course load or have authorization from DHS to have a lower course load than full time. It must include and be mostly in-person classes. So full online coursework is not allowed. And if they depart that university or change universities without prior authorization, they can lose their status. So in this case, there are two different types of immigration violations that might be at play. One is the fact that the university they were attending was not, in fact, a real university. So their status being dependent on that university goes away when the university goes away. The second is whether or not Immigration and Customs Enforcement believed they knew that the university did not offer the right kind of courses and signed up anyway, in which case they were charged with perpetrating fraud on the government on their immigration status.
I think it was part of the argument in terms of why these students should be deported that supposedly they did know.
Yes, supposedly they did know. But the only way for that to be challenged is via immigration court. So you mentioned in your opening and through the reporting that most of these students accepted what is called voluntary departure. So when they are charged with being deportable, the government can offer the ability for them to just leave the country without any further immigration consequences. That is at the government's discretion, and apparently they offered that to many students, and they just chose to go home rather than fight it. But some are fighting this in immigration court, and that is where a possible defense might lie, that they did not know or could not have known that this was a fraudulent university, particularly if it was noted on the ICE website that it had been approved by ICE. Or that they've been duped. But that's going to be up to an immigration judge to determine whether or not that's grounds for them to stay.
Yeah, according to a statement that ICE sent us, ICE officials in Detroit sent us, there were about 250 students apprehended on charges related to Farmington. About 4 out of 5 were granted voluntary departure and left the U.S. Of the remainder, about half of them got a final removal order. Mm-hmm. And the remaining students have either filed for some sort of relief or are contesting their removals with the Executive Office for Immigration Review. Right. We also asked whether or not it considers this sting a form of entrapment, which some of the defendants in these cases have argued that it is. ICE declined to comment on that in its statement back to us. Now, Teresa, part of what it did note is that there are two kinds of visas that are granted to non-immigrant students, F visas and M visas.
Yes.
Talk about what these visas are and what is involved in getting them and keeping them.
Sure. So an F visa is for academic students, students who are attending universities, colleges, degree-granting institutions, certain other types of professional certification can qualify, but it's academic related. M visas are for vocational or technical schools usually, and there are a lot fewer of those issued each year. My understanding was that this school was reporting to be an F granting university, a degree granting university.
Let me get to a quick comment before we pause. Greta emailed, foreign students who overstay their visas, why do they merit some special measure of compassion? There are legal paths to apply for a visa extension, but Farmington was not one of them, and the applicants were seeking what Farmington advertised, a dodgy way to stay in the U.S. Teresa?
So the duration of status for a student is, again, based on them continuing a course of work or engaging in work authorization that's authorized consequent to their student status, something called optional practical training. If you have completed your course of study and want to stay in the United States, then yes, you need to either seek a further course of study at another institution or possibly a work visa with an employer who can sponsor you. But it's not necessarily that easy to do. In this case, the students were seeking a further course of study. And again, without knowing the details of any individual cases, this university did purport to be a valid university approved by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And so if that is the basis in order to qualify, there's not necessarily reason for them to doubt that it was a legitimate place.
Much more for us to discuss as we continue with Teresa Cardinal Brown, a former DHS official and director of the Immigration and Cross-Border Policy, director of Immigration and Cross-Border Policy at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Niraj Wariku, who covers immigration for the Detroit Free Press. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing the ICE sting targeting international students in Michigan and what that says about some of the difficulties of being a foreign student in the U.S. with Teresa Cardinal Brown, a former DHS official, now with the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Niraj Wariku of the Detroit Free Press. We'd love to hear from you. Comment on our Facebook page. Tweet us at 1A or email 1A@WAMU.org. Scott tweeted, I worked with a significant number of international students as a graduate assistant at a prestigious music school. The issues I saw my students navigate had more to do with a lack of institutional supports to ensure student success. A significant number failed my classes as a result. Scott, I hear you on that, and that might be a good place to bring in another voice in our conversation. Also with us in studio is Senem Bakar, Director of International Student and Scholar Services at American University in Washington. American owns the license to WAMU, the station that produces 1A. Senem, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
With regards to Scott's comment, I wonder how you'd react to that in terms of stepping back from this case in Michigan, but just for international students in general, having a lack of institutional supports to ensure their success. Does that ring true to you?
Absolutely. International students are trying to navigate a system that is highly decentralized, and most of them are not used to that. So it's up to us as institutions to try to help them adapt to our education system, our own campus, which might be very different than the neighboring campus in the same city. So institutional support is paramount in students' success.
Talk about what happens at AU when an international student arrives here. I mean, we're in D.C., so it's a highly international city. We have a School of International Studies, which is highly prestigious, so we get kids from all over the world. But talk about what happens when an international student arrives at AU, they're finally getting their education underway. What happens?
Sure. We take the responsibility as an institution to create immigration documents, right, to bring those students to the United States, to our own institution. So that responsibility continues through orienting them to the institution, because we are teaching them how this institution operates, how American classroom education is different maybe than that of what they are used to, and then how to live in our dormitories. It's a lot of unknown. that they are trying to navigate. So we have orientations that continues throughout the semester through different programs. We have also print information as well as workshops continuing throughout the semester. It doesn't end at the end of the semester, but the first semester is very, very important. Add to that is the advocacy that we have to do with our rest of the campus, with our partners. And I am very proud to say that the institution is very receptive to those, you know, challenges that they have to adapt to, because it is a challenge. Like you said, we are bringing students from all over the world. And the challenge is stemming from the differences in education systems, mostly.
And I just want to be clear, when you mention the immigration documents, this may go without saying, but just to be clear about that, sure, the university and immigration are in communication in terms of the permissions for that student to be in the U.S. So there are documents that come from the university to say, hey, ICE, the student is here for a reason.
Absolutely.
We are vouching for their presence in the U.S.
Very good. Absolutely.
How hard is it to get a student visa?
That's a very good question for a U.S. consulate, but I can tell you what we need to do to help the student apply and obtain a student visa. The first thing first, we are authorized by DHS to create U.S. government documents, immigration documents, in this case, an I-20 for an F-1 visa. With that, we send students information about how to apply for a student visa at a U.S. consulate wherever they are applying. There are helpful tips that the State Department shares with us, with the education community, almost every year. These are the reasons why students are denied, and we make that information available to our students. We also ask them to bring certain documentation to the visa interview. And most of the times, our students are able to obtain visas at a consulate.
So you are generating documents for immigration.
Yes.
You're walking the students through the system so
yes.
that they can get through their education. So okay. as an educational, as a degree-granting institution, they really have to lean on the university very, very heavily just to survive in this system.
A very good way of saying that, absolutely.
Teresa, a lot of colleges, I think, are eager to have international students. I mean, some university systems have said they want more international students because international students pay more than in-state students and they've got books to balance. But
yes.
setting that aside, having international students, I think, is a good thing for a university, is a feather in the cap, even though there's a lot of process and bureaucracy to work through to get them, keep them, and then graduate them.
Sure. For most major degree-granting institutions in the United States, having a foreign student population is evidence of the quality of that education, that they are able to attract students who are choosing to study outside their country of nationality and could go anywhere in the world and chose to come to not only the United States, but to that institution. Maybe it's because their programs are special, they have advanced studies in certain things, and of course, you know, the opportunity to come to the United States and possibly for many of these students stay and work is an enticement, particularly in the STEM fields. International students have brought a lot of innovation and a lot of research and study that helps keep the United States at the forefront of a lot of technical and innovation. And that's also a feather in the cap for universities when the students are publishing, when they are getting patents for their work, et cetera, et cetera. It also brings diversity to the student body. Most colleges and universities see themselves as places where young people encounter the world for the first time outside of their, you know, towns where they grew up and their households, and seeing a bigger slice of that world than even their state or their neighborhood or their city by having international students there is also part of the university experience. So there's a lot of reasons why universities want international students.
Kind of to that last point you just made, Michael emailed, as an economic student at the University of Missouri, many of my peers were international students. I watched as one of my better friends outworked and outperformed me, but was repeatedly turned down for jobs as employers did not want to sponsor an entry-level position for him. He ended up with the choice of returning to Mexico City or going to graduate school. I am now an attorney and appreciate the rule of law, but this sting operation seems to be a solution in search of a problem, while the real issue is a broken system which makes it difficult for talented people who are already here to stay here. Niraj, could you respond to Michael's comment in terms of the way that folks in the area have reacted to this, whether people feel this was a solution in search of a problem or a legitimate solution to a real problem?
Yes, I think what Mike said, what Michael said, resonates with people that I've talked with. They feel that the way that this operation was done was unfair, according to defense attorneys and others. In other words, if there is a problem with shady schools, well, then shut them down, right? If you have universities that are like a diploma mill, deal with them in your own way. But to set up this whole fake university and then lure them in and then arrest them, I think that's a problem. One thing that was concerning was the way the arrests were done. They suddenly arrested all these people, most of whom did not have any criminal records, put them in jail. You know, in some cases, they were housed with, hardened criminals. Some of them complained of being mistreated, according to reports. So the way it was done was kind of questionable. And I think it kind of concerned that there's a concern that it's going to turn off people from coming to the United States, that people will be reluctant to apply for programs because they won't know if it's real. Like, what if they're applying for a university and it turns out it's a fake operation? You know, there's no way for them to know. If they see it on the website, the Department of Homeland Security's website, they think it's legitimate. So those are the concerns that some have about the ramifications of how this was done.
Niraj, is there any sense of how common these kinds of sting operations are?
Well, there was another one done in New Jersey. It was called the University of North New Jersey, where they also created a fake university. In that case, they did not do mass arrests. It was handled differently. They did not round them up in the way that they did this year. So that was held differently. And in that case, there's been a lawsuit filed by some of the students at the fake university. They're claiming that they were tricked into this operation. And so we'll see how that lawsuit plays out.
I should note, again, we did invite ICE to participate. It declined, but sent us a statement about the arrests and about the legal process that is still ongoing. Part of the statement reads, quote, the F1 non-immigrant students, that's their designation in the immigration system, arrested for immigration violations as part of this operation were not in valid status because they were not enrolled in a full course of study as required by federal regulations. These students were initially admitted into the United States to attend a school certified by the Student and Exchange Visitor Program, but later transferred to the University of Farmington, which offered no academic or vocational programs of any kind. Since the school did not offer courses or confer degrees, the enrollees were simply using the F1 program as a pay-to-stay scheme, unquote. Niraj, is there any sense that the students who were caught up in this dragnet knew that Farmington was fake and enrolled anyway?
Well, they didn't. I don't think they knew, according to defense attorneys, that they knew that it was a fake operation created by ICE. That was something that they were not aware of. And I think confused a lot of them when they were arrested that this was a sting operation. Some of them did have some suspicions when they didn't have a physical location. We know that some of the students were asking the fake university, do you have a physical site for your classes? And so some of them became suspicious enough that they transferred out or tried to transfer. But for a lot of them, it happened pretty quickly. You know, they may have enrolled in 2018, and just a few months later, they were arrested by ICE, so they didn't get time to transfer out. But it's unclear, I don't think it's the case that they knew it was created by ICE, according to defense attorneys.
I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. Teresa, to that point about the diploma mills, Judith emailed, sorry to disillusion you, but individuals do and always have tried to get visas through fake universities. Don't students who want to stay bear responsibility for researching the universities they apply to? I'm not a fan of sting operations and detest the anti-immigrant actions of this administration, but it is legitimate to enforce U.S. laws about student visas. What about that, Teresa, particularly how maybe those laws have been enforced in other ways besides, this kind of a sting operation?
Sure. So two things to understand. In the immigration system, the burden is almost always on the foreign national to show that they are authorized to stay in the United States. So in this case, yes, the burden is on the individual to know the rules and apply them appropriately. But I think that one of the questions about this particular operation is that it would have been very difficult maybe for them to know that the university was fake. primarily because ICE went through the trouble of listing them on its own website. In order to qualify as an institution that can issue immigration documents, the institution has to have a physical location and has to offer courses that are in-person classes. So by giving it that air of legitimacy by putting it on its own website, it was telling students, well, if ICE approved it, it must be a legitimate place. It's another thing to say that it's a diploma mill that is advertising something that doesn't exist. And as Niraj mentioned, some of the students were suspicious about that. There is a requirement for physical classes and physical classrooms.
I'm sorry, clarify that idea of a diploma mill.
Sure. A diploma mill is a term, it's not a legal term, but it's a term that's basically given to places that advertise basically selling diplomas when you don't have to do the work. It's not necessarily a legitimate accredited institution. It could be a technical school or a vocational school. There's been a lot of issues with many of them, for-profit schools that have been closed down in recent years, even domestically, because the degrees or certifications they're offering really aren't very good and are not issuing valid qualifications. And ICE has also shut down and ejected from the student visa program universities that haven't met the qualifications, where the accreditation organization, for example, has de-accredited them or itself has gone away.
Senem, I'd love to get your sense of the responsibility and the fault in this case. We got a number of listeners who asked about that very thing, including Grady. Here's what Grady left in the inbox.
My name is Grady. I heard on NPR this morning regarding an entrapment case where the Homeland Security put together a fake university and 8 foreign students applied there in order to stay in the United States longer on their student visa. That's a little shaky on both ends, frankly. Although the fake university was put together perhaps by Homeland Security, they still wanted to stay in the United States under false pretense.
Grady, thanks for calling in. Just to correct part of what he said, it was not 8 foreign students. There were 8 recruiters who were charged in this scheme. There were hundreds of students who were caught up in this, at least, or about 250 as far as we know. But Senem, what about this in terms of there potentially being a little bit of fault on both sides of this?
Sure. First of all, the F1 regulations do allow students to move from one degree to another or one institution to another. There are strict timelines within which they must do that, you know, moment. In this case, students probably were in a valid status when they were trying to transfer out. I don't know the details, but it's pretty much allowed by the regulations. I do agree with Teresa that students are ultimately responsible for their immigration status, and that's a consistent message that we give to students. I do also know that students are not inherently aware of a lot of things that, you know, we know here. Therefore, they rely on their institutions, they rely on their government, you know, site when they check that. If this institution was listed on the DHS site as a DHS-approved institution, I think the student would just trust that information.
Niraj, what about the argument from prosecutors that this was a, as ICE put it, a pay-to-stay arrangement, that the students knew what they were getting into? Is there any evidence of that?
Well, ICE, you know, does make the argument that the students should have known it was a fake university, that it wasn't legitimate. And, you know, I see their point from their perspective. They're trying to crack down on fraudulent universities and what they call a pay-to-stay operation. So, you know, they do have a concern about these sort of shady operation universities taking place. I guess in the defense of the students, some of the attorneys argue that, you know, even those that had an inkling that something was wrong and they tried to rectify it were still getting in trouble. So in some cases, you had students were emailing the fake university saying, hey, you know, where are the physical on-site classes going to happen? Are they going to happen soon? And the university would email them back. And these are obviously undercover agents saying, oh, they're coming or it's coming. You know, so they didn't know what to do because they keep hearing that it's a legitimate university, it's on the website. But I guess that once you are in the university, it's kind of hard to get out.
Right.
So that's the problem, that you're kind of stuck in this situation.
Ross tweeted, setting aside the Byzantine legalities of our immigration system, how can anyone consider this an ethical way to engage in enforcement? Good question. We'll talk about that when we continue our conversation about what this says in terms of immigration and education in the U.S. Stay close. Back now to our conversation with Teresa Cardinal Brown, Niraj Wariku, and Senem Bakar. Still time to get in some of your questions and comments. Teresa, I wonder if you could respond to this one from Fred, who emailed, I'm very confused by this. Seeking a further course of study is a legal way to remain in the country. These students did so far as they knew, so how can they possibly be charged with a crime? As for ICE's contention that some of the students knew it was a phony university, given the extraordinary lengths to which ICE went to give it the appearance of legitimacy, ICE's argument there rings exceedingly hollow. Teresa?
Well, first thing I would say is the students weren't charged with any crimes. Violating immigration law is an administrative law violation. They were charged with being deportable from the United States and then were either deported or are fighting deportation or some were allowed to voluntarily leave. There was no criminal charges filed against any students. And I just want to reiterate that because it gets confusing a lot. The only criminal charges, as far as we know, were filed against the recruiters, who was, I believe, are U.S. entities. But the issue is I think, as he said, although the immigration law places the burden on the foreign national to maintain their status, there's enough about this to say that students probably were very confused about the status of this university. It's unclear. Some of them may have been aware that what they were trying to do was at least shady. But again, because the university wasn't valid and they were not enrolled in a valid university, they did not have valid status. That is the issue. When you don't have valid status, you're required to leave the country one way or the other.
Senem, how hard is it if you're an international student to tell a real accredited school from a fake accredited school like Farmington, setting aside like, you know, Georgetown is a real school, but some of the schools that may not have as high a public profile, how hard is it to actually know that you're on solid ground?
It's actually pretty hard unless the school, shares that information with students, and or it is very visible on your website. And if you look at different institutions, you know, for the same information on their websites, it's very difficult to find the very same information on different institution sites. So that's why students do rely on their own institution if they are here. They do bring to us a form saying that I've been admitted to this institution. Can you transfer me? Our first question is this accredited? Is this, you know, DHS approved? And we have them check all that information.
So they check it themselves?
They have to check it themselves, and we have access to that information also.
Now, when we talk about this accreditation, Senem, like who are we talking about?
We are talking about accrediting agencies in the United States. For example, for us, it is Middle States. Right? Accreditation is one, so their degrees are recognized. Then DHS approval is another one that they must have.
Oh, I understand. So the accreditation is for the actual degree, academic, that it is a legitimate degree-granting institution of a certain quality, which is separate from the immigration certification that they are allowed to come and study at this place.
Yes.
So there's kind of two layers of it. Are you allowed to come to this university at all from another country? And then will this university, if you are admitted, give you a degree that is acceptable for the American workforce?
So, Joshua, I would just offer that you would flip that around, that an institution must be accredited to be approved by DHS to accept foreign students. Yeah. And if an institution loses its accreditation, it can lose the ability to accept foreign students from DHS.
Tio emailed, I was an international student who studied in Ohio as an F1 visa student. My experience in education was largely positive, but I think most people don't realize how stressful it was to navigate America's complex immigration system. This ongoing stress becomes pervasive in everyday life, and I often stressed about committing minor infractions that would potentially lead to huge consequences, i.e. being deported. Senem, I see you nodding to that.
Yeah. Earlier I mentioned the fear of the unknown. When we listen to students, and we do at my institution, we ask questions, that's the number one thing that comes up, that fear of making a mistake all the time. Therefore, coming back to our office all the time or relying on resources that we have, because it is very difficult and things are changing. You know, maybe regulations are not changing that quickly, but the guidance is changing and they have paramount implications for our students. So that's where we do have the responsibility to bring that information to our students and to have that trust with our students that anything that happens, you know, has an implication for your immigration status, we are here to share that information with you.
Niraj, how has this story affected immigrant communities in Michigan that you cover, particularly those who maybe are first or second generation Americans? They've worked real hard, been able to send their children to college, and have tried to play by the rules very, very carefully the whole time. I can only imagine how they're reacting to this.
Yes, it's causing some concern. It's causing a lot of confusion because people who are in these programs are, of course, fearful. What if their university turns out to be fake? You know, there's worry that that they may be thrown out of status. In some cases, the Indian American community has raised concerns about it. They've written letters to officials expressing concern, but there has not been any sort of legal action, no lawsuit, no legal case filed. It hasn't gotten as much attention as other cases, immigration cases have. They might be changed later. It seems to have gotten more attention this month. One thing I would add about the accreditation issue, what's interesting about this case is that the accreditation agency was secretly working with the undercover operation. DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, had them work to pose as sort of a fake university. So that raises questions also about these, some of these accreditation agencies. Are they, do they have universities listed as being legitimate that are actually working for the government? And so we don't know what's happening with other universities potentially.
Teresa, is what these accreditation agencies did legal? Is it legal for an accreditation agency to take part in a law enforcement investigation like this?
I don't know about legality. I think one thing to understand is accreditation agencies are they're private organizations. They're not governmental organizations. And is it ethical is probably a different question. If you are an accreditation agency and you accredit an institution that is later found out to be fraudulent or fake, the reputation of that accreditation agency is at stake. And every other institution accredited by that organization now is probably thinking, does my association with that accreditation agency cause me problems? I think that's where it's going to have issues. And other institutions that are working with that accreditation agency would rightly be worried because there's a that now there's a concern that this that this accreditation agency is willing to, you know, put its name on what is a fake, even in the name of law enforcement.
Well, and you can't not be accredited.
You can't not be accredited.
So as a university, you're kind of... you're kind of painted into a corner in a way.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to understand about this is you know, as you mentioned, there are different types of institutions in the United States. We've seen in the last decade a growth and explosion of online organizations and institutions. Some are affiliated with major degree-granting institutions. Others are privately owned and for-profit that only grant degrees online. And so that leads to further confusion among people who are looking for advanced education. Just generally, and then add to that, if you're a foreign student not familiar with the U.S. system, relying on governmental information and information from the institutions that are supposed to be validating all of this to see whether or not it's an appropriate institution to study in.
Sentiment must be challenging being a university in the middle of all of this. Andre emailed, I've seen both sides of this issue from my wife, who I met while she was on her F visa in the STEM field at the University of Florida, and as a small business owner trying to apply for a work visa for one of our employees. My wife feels strongly that she was able to follow the rules of how to work and study here, and so should other people be held to the same standard. In trying to apply for a work visa as a small company, we were amazed with the flooding of fake and or redundant foreign applications that made it very hard for us to have our employee who had family here, as well as lived in the U.S., 5 months out of the year. We need to focus on facilitating the legal immigration process to keep those who have waited in line. Senator?
Well, Yes, the students are responsible for their immigration status, but it's a joint responsibility for institutions bringing those students here. We are required to educate them, share with them the information that they must know in order to stay in status. To stay in status, there are several conditions to meet, to be in place. And the students are aware of that. Well, I am not saying that students are intentionally violating their status, but there are sometimes extraordinary circumstances. There are sometimes, very restrictive deadlines that maybe in case of employment, for example, they are promised an employment while they are on OPT, but that employment doesn't come through at the last minute, and suddenly the student loses their immigration status.
And then Niraj Andre also kind of makes the point that this is part of a much larger immigration challenge that we have in the U.S., that these students are caught up in an issue that is way, way, way bigger than just them.
Correct. I mean, the broader issue of, whether we're admitting too many immigrants, those are legitimate issues to be discussed. I think the concern here was how they went about doing it, kind of luring them in and tricking them. If you have a problem with the Shady University, shut it down or crack down on it. But some are making the argument, don't go to the extent of luring them in and creating this fake operation and tricking them, essentially.
One listener who asked to remain anonymous emailed, having lived in the United Arab Emirates and worked in Vietnam, I can tell you it is very hard to discern a fake organization in a very different language and culture. The seal of approval on the DHS website makes this shameful. I am all for rooting out dishonest people with student visas, but this is not the way. I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. Let's look forward a little bit. Niraj, what happens now in this case for the students who are fighting to stay in the U.S., for the recruiters who face criminal charges? What are some of the next steps we should keep an eye out for?
Well, in some of the cases, they're still going to be heard before an immigration judge. The last sentencing for the 8 recruiters is going to be next month in January in Detroit. One thing I would add is that some of them who left on what's called a voluntary departure are not being allowed back in. The reason that's significant is that voluntary departure is supposed to be better than deportation because it allows the immigrant to potentially get back into the United States. But according to a defense attorney I spoke to, in at least 2 cases that he knows of, they're not being allowed back in. So it seems like they're being blacklisted even if they had a voluntary departure. So that's concerning some. They might be permanently excluded from entering the United States back again. One thing I would add is a lot of them are from rural backgrounds, right? They came from farming backgrounds. They had hard lives and they were trying to improve themselves. And now, of course, they're in debt in some cases because they had tuition from other universities. And ICE got millions of dollars out of this, right? Because they were paying tuition. They were paying, on average $12,000 a year to this fake university. And all of that's money they have lost, and it went to the U.S. government.
So that, actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, Niraj. That goes right to a question I was just about to ask you from Margaret, who emailed, this kind of sanctioned government treachery to quote-unquote catch otherwise legal immigrants is reprehensible. With these stories coming to light, I want to know exactly what was done with the thousands and thousands of dollars collected for tuition from the prospective students. Was it used to continue funding questionable ICE programs? Was it turned over to the U.S. Treasury to pay down the national debt? So, Niraj, this money just went to the U.S. government, the money they spent on tuition for these phony degrees?
Exactly, because they were paying on average, $12,000 a year, and you had 600-plus students enrolled. So if you do the math, it comes out to millions of dollars that the U.S. government took in from this. I don't know where that money is going to go. I'm assuming it's still with DHS. But there's been no lawsuit filed challenging that.
So, Teresa, this affects many, many students, although I'm not sure how many students are here on student visas. Do you know how large that population is roughly?
In the last year, about 350,000 new student visas were issued. That doesn't count the numbers that are already in the United States. That's actually a decrease from several years ago where we had more than 600,000 new student visas. We've actually seen a decline in international students in the United States. So it's still a fair number, but it's declining.
Senem, did you want to jump in?
I do have the number, actually, recent Open Door release. It's over 1 million international students in the United States. Yes, Teresa is correct that there is a slight decrease. The decrease is in enrolled students, but students who are on OPT, optional practical training, there is a slight increase.
So, Teresa, what does this mean going forward for international students? Bill asked, how can anyone trust the list DHS provides now? How many others listed are fake universities? How many will be? Teresa, what does this mean in a larger sense going forward for international students who we need in this country?
Yeah, I mean, the NAFSA, which is the Association of International Educators, says that foreign students in 2018 contributed about $35 billion to the economy. So it is a help to the United States. I think there's a couple of things. You know, there's a saying that trust takes a long time to earn and a second to lose. And I think what you're submitter said about, you know, how can we trust the government agency when they've done this? That's an open question. I think there are a lot of uphill wins for foreign students coming to the United States right now. There is a lot of competition from other parts of the world to entice students to study there. You have some countries that are actively encouraging their students not to study abroad, China, for example, and the United States is making it more difficult for some of them to come to the United States with vetting programs and things like that. And so I think that over time, these kinds of things just make students think again. You know, the United States is still a destination of choice for millions of foreign students around the world, but we no longer can presume that status is untouchable.
Teresa Cardinal Brown, the Director of Immigration and Cross-Border Policy at the Bipartisan Policy Center. Teresa, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Niraj Wariku, who covers immigration and religion for the Detroit Free Press. Niraj, thank you.
Thanks for having me on the show.
And Senem Bakar, the Director of International Student and Scholar Services at American University. Senem, thank you.
Thank you for having me on the show.
This conversation was produced by Stacia Brown. To learn more about her and the rest of our team, go to the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University, distributed by NPR. I'm Joshua Johnson, and this is 1A.